Track 20. Jesus is taken down from the cross. Mary cradles Jesus' body and follows it to the sepulchre, where she is confronted by Satan.
It is now time for Jesus' body to be taken down from the cross and carried to the sepulchre. Maria Valtorta writes, Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea arrive with ladders, and with Pilate's permission to remove the body, they climb with levers and tongs. The left palm is unnailed, and then the feet. John has to make a great effort to hold and support the body of his master between the cross and his own body. Mary has placed herself with her back against the foot of the cross, ready to receive her Jesus in her lap. But the unnailing of the right arm is the most difficult operation. At last the nail is seized with the tongs and pulled out gently, and they cautiously bring the body down the ladders. When on the ground, they would like to lay him on the sheet that they have spread over their mantles, but Mary wants him. She has opened her mantle, letting it hang on one side, and she sits with her knees rather apart to form a cradle for her Jesus. He is now in his mother's lap. Mary is holding him with her right arm round his shoulders and her left one stretched over the abdomen to support him by the hips. When she succeeds in removing the torturing crown, she bends to cure all the scratches of the thorns with her kisses. She wipes the tears that drop on the cold body covered with blood, and she thinks of cleaning it with her tears and her veil, which is still around Jesus' loins. She pulls one end of the veil towards herself, and she begins to clean and dry the holy limbs with it. While doing so, her hand touches the gash on his chest. Her little hand, covered with the linen veil, enters almost completely into the large hole of the wound. Mary bends to see in the dim light, and she sees. She sees the chest torn open and the heart of her son. She utters a cry. A sword seems to be splitting her heart. She shouts and then throws herself on her son, and she seems dead too. They succor and console her. They want to take her divine dead son away from her. And she shouts, Where shall I put you? In which place, safe and worthy of you? Joseph says, Take courage, O woman. My sepulchre is new and worthy of a great man. I give it to him. But I beg you, as it is getting dark, let us proceed. With Nicodemus and John at the shoulders, Joseph at the feet, they lift the corpse, enveloped in the sheet, and resting on the mantles which act as a stretcher, and they set off down the road. Mary, supported by her sister-in-law and by the Magdalene, goes down towards the sepulchre, followed by the other women disciples who have picked up the nails, the tongs, the crown, the sponge, and the cane. Jesus speaks to Maria Valtorta about the suffering of his mother. He says, I was shipwrecked in the midst of a stormy ocean, and I had to die that way. My heart burst under the anguish of this weight and this abandonment. My mother was close to me. She really was. The two of us, the martyrs, were both enveloped in the torment and abandonment. and to see one another was torture added to torture. For every shudder of mine lacerated the fibres of my mother, and every moan of hers was a new scourge upon my scourged flesh and a new nail driven into my heart. We were at once united and divided, so as to suffer more. My mother bore the cross before I did. She experienced the atrocious tortures of the crucified before I did. She began to carry that cross and to experience it from the time her mission and mine were revealed to her. I, by my blood, and Mary, by her tears, obtained the forgiveness of God for you. Then Mary speaks to Maria Valtorta about the great cry, which the evangelist spoke about, and which was the beginning of the word Mother. Jesus had said everything and done everything. He had entrusted his spirit to the Father, and he had called upon the Father in his boundless pain. And the Father had not shown himself to the one with whom he had been well pleased. The victim called his mother with a wail of lacerating pain, which pierced through the heavens, causing forgiveness to rain down. And it pierced through my heart, causing blood and tears. And I bore that sound within me until Easter morning. Maria Valtorta describes the burial of Jesus and an horrific encounter of Mary with Satan. The little procession finds the sepulchre of Joseph of Arimathea hewn out of the limestone of the mountain. The compassionate disciples enter with Jesus' body. Also John and Mary go in, but nobody else because the preparatory room is small. The other women are near the opening. The two bearers uncover Jesus while they prepare the bandages and spices on a sort of shelf in a corner. Mary bends over her son in the light of two torches, weeping. And once again she wipes Jesus with her veil, which is still around his loins. She takes the poor tortured hands. She clasps them in her own. She kisses the fingers and stretches them. She tries to connect the gaping wounds and moans in her dreadful grief. She straightens and joins the poor feet. The left one in particular is almost flat, as if it had no ankle. She sees the gash of the lance, which is now wide open like a mouth. The point of the heart can be seen distinctly between the breastbone and the left costal arch, and about 2 centimetres above it there is the cut made by the point of the lance. Mary utters a cry again, as on Calvary. A lance seems to be piercing her, so much so that she writhes in her pain, pressing her hands on her heart, pierced like the heart of Jesus. How many kisses on that wound, poor mother! She then attends to Jesus' head, his mouth, his hair. She says, "What have they done to you, son?" She takes him in her arms, passing her arm under his shoulders and pressing him to her heart with the other hand, while she lulls him. Her gesture makes me weep and suffer as if a hand rummaged in my heart. And now, with all her strength, she says, "Go, I will stay. You will come back in 3 days' time, and we will go out together. Oh, to see the world again, leaning on your arm, son. How beautiful the world will be in the light of your risen smile." Nicodemus and Joseph approach her, laying vases and bandages, the clean shroud, a base of water, I think, and what seems to be lint wad on a kind of seat which is on the other side of the stone. Mary notices this and asks, "What are you doing? What do you want? To prepare him? For what? Leave him in the lap of his mother. If I succeed in warming him up, he will rise sooner. If I succeed in consoling the father and in comforting him for the deicide hatred, the father will forgive sooner and Jesus will come back sooner." The sorrowful mother is almost raving. "Am I perhaps telling lies? But do you not see that you do not believe in his resurrection? You believe in it? No. Why are you standing there preparing bandages and spices? Because you consider him a poor dead man, cold today, putrefied tomorrow, and that is why you want to embalm him. Do you not remember? The Son of Man is going to be handed over to the power of men who will kill him, but on the third day he will be raised again. Do you not remember? Destroy this temple of the true God, and in 3 days I will rebuild it. Oh, men, the temple was his body. Are you shaking your heads? Are you pitying me? John, you were present when he raised the young daughter of Jairus and the young man of Nain from the dead. They were really dead, were they not? It was not just a heavy sleep, tell me." And John replies, "They were dead. The girl had been dead 2 hours, the young man a day and a half." "And did they rise at his order?" "They rose at his order." "Have you heard that? You too, have you heard? But why are you shaking your heads?" There is a long, grave silence, then an inhuman howl. Mary staggers, pressing a hand against her breast. They support her. She repels them. She seems to repel the compassionate people. In actual fact, she repels what she alone can see. And she shouts, "Back, back, you cruel one, not this revenge. Be silent, I do not want to hear you. Be silent. Ah, he is biting at my heart." "Who, mother?" "Oh, John, it is Satan. Satan is saying he will not rise. No prophet said that. Oh, most high God, help me, all of you. Good spirits, and you, compassionate men, my reason is wavering. I do not remember anything any more. What does the prophet say? What does the psalm say? Oh, who will repeat to me the passages that speak of my Jesus?" It is the Magdalene who, in her melodious voice, recites David's psalm on the passion of the Messiah. Mary weeps more bitterly, supported by John, and her tears fall on her dead son. Nicodemus and Joseph beckon to John and the Magdalene. The Magdalene says, "Come, mother," trying to take Mary away from her son and to separate Jesus' fingers, which are interlaced with Mary's. The mother straightens herself up. She is impressive. For the last time, she stretches out the poor bloodless fingers and lays the inert hand along the side of the body. Then she lowers her arms towards the ground, and standing upright, her head bent slightly back, she prays and offers. Not a word is heard, but from her whole appearance, it is clear that she is praying. Then she turns round and says, "You may continue, but he will rise from the dead. Goodbye, son. Goodbye, my child. Goodbye. Lord, have mercy on me." The two preparers spread ointments and spices all over Jesus' body and cover it with the shroud. Jesus is now annulled. Even his shape is confused under the linens. It looks like a long heap of cloths, narrower at the ends and wider at the centre, laid on the grey stone. Mary weeps louder. They lift her with difficulty, and with greater difficulty they take her away from the funereal bed. They rearrange the cloths that have been upset, and carrying her rather than supporting her, they take away the poor mother, who goes off looking back to see her Jesus, who is left alone in the dark sepulchre. They leave the sepulchre and roll a stone over the entrance as the guards are arriving. But Mary does not want to leave her son. In an excruciating scene of utter anguish, described in more detail by Maria Valtorta, she says she will stay. Here is my bread and my bed. Here is my abode. I have no other home, no other purpose. You may go. Go back to the world which is disgusting. I am staying where there is no greed or smell of blood. Finally, it is the Magdalene who finds a reason capable of bending the sorrowful mother to obedience. She says, "You are good, you are holy. You believe and you are strong. But what are we? You are aware of it. The majority have run away. Those who have remained are trembling. The doubt which is already in us would overwhelm us. You are the mother. You have not only duties and rights on your son, but also duties and rights on what belongs to your son. You must come back with us, among us, to gather us together, to reassure us, to infuse your faith into us. I say to you, if we succeed in being united in the faith in his resurrection, he will rise earlier. We will evoke him with our love. Mother, Mother of my Saviour, come back with us, since you are the love of God, to give us this love of yours. Do you want poor Mary of Magdala to get lost again after he saved her with so much pity?" "No," replies Mary, "I would be reproached for that. You are right, I must go back and look for the apostles, the disciples, the relatives, everybody, and say, have faith. Say, he forgives you. Whom have I already told so? Oh, the Iscariot. I will have to look for him also, because he is the biggest sinner." Mary remains with her head bent on her breast, trembling as if she was disgusted. And then she says, "John, you will look for him, and you will bring him to me. You must do that, and I must do that. Father, let this also be done for the redemption of mankind. Let us go." She stands up. They leave the half-dark vegetable garden. The guards look at them go out without saying anything. Then Jesus says to Maria Valtorta, "The torture continued with periodic attacks until dawn on Sunday. In my passion, I had only one temptation, but the mother, the woman, expiated on behalf of woman, guilty several times of every evil. And Satan behaved mercilessly with infinite cruelty towards the conquerors. Mary had defeated him. This was the most atrocious temptation for Mary. Temptation against the flesh of the mother, temptation against the heart of the mother, and temptation against the spirit of the mother. The world thinks the redemption ended with my last breath. No, it did not. My mother completed it by adding her treble torture to redeem the treble concupiscence. She struggled for 3 days against Satan, who wanted to induce her to deny my word and not to believe in my resurrection. Mary was the only one who continued to believe. She is great and blessed also because of that faith. You have become acquainted also with that, a torture corresponding to my torture at Gethsemane. The world will not understand this page, but those who are in the world without being of the world will understand it, and they will have an increased love for the sorrowful mother. That is why I gave it. Go in peace with our blessing.